Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, before we get to this week's episode, my guest and I referenced several UFO videos in great detail in our conversation. So if you're just listening to the audio version of this, I do want to let you know that the full episode is also available in video format over on the Ryan Sprague YouTube channel. I've included the actual UFO videos we talk about in the video version. So if you want more context and to see some really compelling UFO footage, I'll link it in the show notes, or just head over to YouTube and type in Ryan Sprague. The channel should show up. And with that, enjoy the episode. Today on the show, New York Post reporter, documentarian, and host of the Basement Office web series, Stephen Greenstreet.
I'm not here to convince you that what this pilot saw that zipped over his plane is an alien. I'm here to convince you that he saw something unidentified. Neither he, the FAA, the military, the people who are supposed to know, don't know.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
So I'm really happy to have you here. When I first saw your show over at the New York Post, I was like, this is the kind of stuff I love. I love seeing people tackle the topic of UFOs in such a serious manner. I mean, I feel like that ridicule factor is shedding, and we can definitely talk about that. But first and foremost, I got to get the origin story from you. How did you first get interested in UFOs to begin with?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and I'm a 90s kid, so I obviously the X-Files was like, that was my thing in the 90s, was the X-Files. But if I remember correctly, I would go to the library when I was 10, 11 years old, and I remember renting Crash at Corona, which is about the Roswell crash.
Right, yep.
And I remember renting Bud Hopkins' books, which, you know, Bud Hopkins wrote a series on alien abductions, you know, real cases of people claiming to have been abducted by aliens. And I remember being 10 or 11 and reading those books. So I think it started back then.
Wow. Yeah. I think Crash at Corona was actually the first UFO book I got my hands on, too, at the library. So yeah. There's got to be something to that, man. Thank you, Stanton Friedman, first and foremost. Well, before we even get to the Basement Office, which is kind of the focus of the interview, this web series that you created, I know you had a UFO sighting. And if you're willing to talk about it, I would absolutely love for you to share that with our audience. It's strikingly similar to my own experience. So I want to hear it from your mouth first before I say anything. But yeah, would you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, totally. So this is 2003. I was living in Utah. I was going to Brigham Young University at the time, and the LDS Church has a film studio, a couple huge sound stages. They film multi-million dollar movies there. I was a PA, which is basically a grunt, coffee getter at the time, you know, my beginning stages. And this one particular night, my job was to guard the door outside the soundstage. So make sure no one comes in while we're filming. So it's night. I'm standing outside of the soundstage forever. And, you know, my mind was drifting. I was, you know, bored. And something caught my eye. And so I looked up, and it was a triangle like this, not like you know, F-117 size, but more, you know, a wider triangle. And it was going from south to north, at a relatively slow speed. So at first I thought balloon, maybe a blimp, but the size of it didn't make sense for a blimp. There were low clouds that you could see the stars through the clouds, and they were very low and zipping across at high speed. And this sucker was under the clouds. It wasn't above the clouds. I could see it. So only about 1,000 feet up. And so as my mind is processing what I'm looking at, I go, oh, right. I was at an air show a couple years ago and I saw the B-2s. That's pretty sweet. The Hill Air Force Base is right down the road. It's a B-2. And then as it got right above me and went past, it didn't make a single sound. Nothing. And that's when my emotions and adrenaline started flowing, because I'm used to that auditory connection to an airplane, right? My whole life, auditory connection to an airplane in the sky. And when my brain didn't receive that auditory connection, my brain started to go haywire a little bit, like something's wrong, something's not right. And my breathing, I remember my heart started pounding, and it was like a little bit of a panic. And it disappeared off into the horizon, and the red light, I remember the red light above the door went bing, which means it went off. The red light above the door went off, which means open the door, come in, you know, to the film set. So I kind of like snapped out of it and, you know, went in to do my job. And I was still in a daze, and I went up to my assistant director and I said, hey, I think I just saw a UFO. And they were like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, no, really, I'm being serious. I think I just did. And everybody's in their space. I didn't have anybody to talk to in that moment about my sighting. I think I told a handful of people, you know, close to me at the time about it, but because they weren't there, they didn't have any emotional reaction to it. And then I just kind of like went on with my life until I started the basement office, where I got to, you know, talk about it with Nick Pope. And at that moment, when I was talking about it with Nick Pope, it was like all those emotions just kind of like came back.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy how these things happen. So I do want to share full disclosure. I had a UFO sighting that was almost identical to what you're describing. Triangular formation. I didn't see a structure, like a machine or anything. I just saw the, you know, sort of that formation. And yep. This was in upstate New York in 1995. So, I mean, this was a while ago. And you mentioned you were child of the 90s. I was listening to Green Day on a Discman when I saw mine. And I just remember the same thing, man. I took my headphones off because I saw this thing above me. And all I could hear was like, I was off a body of water. I was fishing. And all I could hear was like the water hitting the dock. And I could hear Green Day on my headphones like 20 feet away because I whipped the headphones off. And no noise whatsoever. So I don't know what to make of that, but the way you describe how you felt during it and kind of what was going on is so similar. And I don't know if it's because we saw the same thing or this is just a human reaction to these things. We don't know how to process it, but yeah, man, it was crazy when you relayed that story in your show. I was just like sitting there glued to it like, oh my God, is he going to say the same thing? Like, yeah, that I experienced, too. So, I don't know. There's got to be something to it.
Let me ask you, the object you saw, what sort of speed would you estimate it was moving at?
Super slow. I mean, when I first saw it, it was right above me, just floating. It wasn't moving when I first saw it. It was just above me. I don't know. Okay. I don't know how many feet up or anything like that. But I was at a motel, and my dad was inside. I could see him inside. So I start yelling for him, and he actually came out and saw the thing with me. So I had another witness. The funny thing is, though, when I yelled for him to come in, that's when it started moving over the water super slow. And Canada was right on the other side of the St. Lawrence River in New York. And I just remember he came out, and it was coasting over the water and headed right towards Canada and then disappeared.
You know, part of my brain, as I said in the show, still wants to believe it was a human-made, you know, top-secret black project, something of that nature. As I said, you know, Hill Air Force Base is driving distance from my sighting. Area 51 is directly to the west of Utah there. And so I was trying to triangulate, you know, where could this thing could have come from. So part of my brain still is open to the fact that it was, you know, some top secret human new technology thing. But it's the science, man. Like, to keep a large structure in the air at slow speed or no speed, you need an incredible amount of energy, and that energy makes noise.
Right.
And, you know, and I didn't hear that noise. And so that means something new.
Yeah.
Something that we haven't seen before, you know, that we don't know about. It means something fantastic.
I feel the same way. I feel like whatever I saw was probably man-made because it just seemed that way to me. I mean, I was 12 when I saw this.
Did you take a photo of it?
No. No, I had nothing, man. Nothing.
Yeah, but did you think in your mind as you're observing this, oh, I must run and grab my camera?
No, I was...
No, exactly.
Exactly, man. And that is... We do hear that from a lot of witnesses. Like, you're so in the moment, and no, I was frozen there. Like, I was petrified. So I think that's what kept me there more than anything. And, like, those things weren't going through my head. I wanted my dad. And that's why that was, like, my first reaction was I wanted a parent to come protect me from whatever the hell this thing was. Well, you did mention the basement office. I definitely want to touch on this with you. What inspired you to create the basement office? I mean, was this something you'd always been working on? Did the New York Post come to you? How did this all come to be?
Yeah, the New York Post, I work at the New York Post. The New York Post came to me and said, hey, you know what? We've noticed on YouTube and on site, a lot of people are clicking and searching for UFO stories, especially lately, as you know, one can assume why, you know, wonder why everyone's suddenly interested in UFOs. Maybe we should do a series, like a video series on UFOs. And I'm at work, I'm known as like the UFO guy. Like, everyone kind of knows, oh, Steve knows about UFOs, go ask him. And so they were like, you know, pitch something. So I came up with the concept of basically, I didn't want to do a History Channel travel discovery type UFO show where it's like, in 1995, a group of citizens looked up in the overproduced, like, cinematic escapism, like, infotainment. I didn't want to, like, beat people over the heads. I wanted to just, I just pictured Mulder's office from the X-Files.
Yeah.
Pictured a desk and me talking to experts and analyzing the facts. And anything that can't be proven or anything that has nothing to back it up, let's acknowledge that and move it to the side. And let's just focus on what we know and what we can prove. Because honestly, I think that's the scarier stuff, not the conspiracy theories, but the cold hard facts. Like, when you look at radar data and police audio or radio audio and, you know, pilot and military and government testimony, that's the stuff where it starts to, like, blow your mind, you know? So that was, like, the general concept. Two people at a desk talking about the facts about UFOs.
Yeah, it's the perfect pitch. I mean, you could tell by the amount of views you got on the series. Like, this is something people want, especially since the New York Times story broke about this. And we'll get into that. But you did mention Nick Pope. Now, this guy is the real-life Mulder, and he's a hero in the quote-unquote UFO field. So how did you get hooked up with this guy? And, how did that all come about?
Yeah, so originally, the idea I had was each episode I would have a different co-host. Like, each episode would have, like, a guest. And we emailed and sent invites out to people asking if they were interested. Nick was one of the first ones to respond that he was interested. We flew him out. And right off the bat, I was like, wait, no, he has to stick around for all the episodes. Because he was so great. Like, not just on and off camera, but super smart. And, like, our chemistry, like, you could tell, like, we bounce off each other really well. And I said, no, Nick has to be, like, the co-star of this show. And he agreed. He was like, great, let's do it. And so that was like a blessing. Like, really, like, he helped make the show what it is.
Right. And for my listeners and viewers who don't know, this dude was the head of the MOD UFO desk. So, I mean, he was who people went to investigate these in terms of how the British dealt with this topic, yeah. which is an interesting correlation to how America deals with it as well. So, I mean, you pick the right guy, and hell, let's be honest, a British accent just ups the quality of everything, right? The the elegance and the eloquence, I guess, is the right word.
Oh, totally. He adds a refined touch.
Right, right. Now, I think when you first started the series, you kind of caught up the viewers with what was going on. So this New York Times story breaks about a secret UFO program having gone on. The public didn't know about this. So I want to get your initial thoughts on this, Stephen. Like, when this story broke, I don't know about you, but I was, like, dumbfounded. I've been studying UFOs since I was, like, 13 or 14 years old. And we all thought Project Blue Book was the last time that the government was investigating UFOs. So this comes out of nowhere, and, like, very few people knew about it, and it just exploded. So what did you think when this story first broke? Were you like, this is it? We're in disclosure now.
I distinctly remembering seeing the article and then going, no way. And then I read a little bit of the article. I was like, wait, this is the New York Times? And I scrolled back to confirm it was the New York Times. And I was like, no way. And Politico and then CNN. And I was just blown away that the top media companies were covering this, not just like as a quick one-off, but like extensive articles, like well-researched, well-interviewed articles. That was different, you know, I think. And I think for those of us like already in the UFO world in a way, it was more of a big deal. And I think your average layman was honestly, the people I talked to who weren't really into it, they were like, wait, what? You know, like, say that again. Like, yeah. The New York Times just like blew the lid off the Pentagon's UFO program. Here are three videos you can look at and watch. And people were just like, wait, what's going on? You know?
Yeah. So in terms of those videos that were released as well, we got three videos, the gimbal, the Tic Tac, and the, the Go Fast. Yeah. What's your favorite, man? I got to ask, out of the three, what was like the one you found most compelling?
Okay. So let me do two tiers. So first, I believe it's the Go Fast, where the thing, you can see the water underneath of it, and it's zipping super fast. And I love hearing the military men, you hearing their audio as they're observing it in the moment, and their excitement and their adrenaline, because these are guys that fly for a living. These are guys that observe fast things every day. And the fact that these guys are blown away by what they're looking at, it makes it more impactful. Because if it's blowing them away, then it must be something unique. Because that's their profession, you know? I'm sure they're hard to impress when it comes to airplanes, you know?
Yeah.
So that one. But the story behind the semi-boring 2004 Tic Tac video, because honestly, the 1 minute that's been released, it's like, it's just there. I mean, it's just a blob.
Right.
But the context of that blob, the story behind it, is just incredible. Like, it's still hard for me to wrap my brain around the true story behind it.
That is such a good point. I think this is where witness testimony is so important. We could have a million videos of things hanging in the sky or whatnot, but until we have context for what actually happened, I think that's where the meat of it is. You know, we did get these videos, which, yeah, like you said, the Tic Tac one is pretty anticlimactic until, you know, it shoots off right at the end. But how long are these videos? I don't think anyone in the public has that knowledge yet of what are we not seeing in the videos that was caught.
So in episode one of season two, the new season that of The Basement Office, we interview witnesses who were in the room and watched the raw footage of the Tic Tac video as it was happening. And they estimate anywhere between 8 and 12 minutes. So while there's 1 minute released online, there's actually like 9-10 minutes after that. That hasn't been released. And, you know, we learned in the last few months, the Navy admitted that they have classified slides, briefing slides on the Tic Tac, and they also said we have a classified video of the Tic Tac. So one has to assume, you know, connect the dots, they have a longer video.
Someone's got it. Well, hopefully we'll get to see that someday. If not, it's amazing that we're still talking about the same damn video like almost 3 years later now, but that's how these things work. We'll take what we can get. And I know in your first episode as well, you talk about the best evidence that's out there. You know, you covered the Trent photos, the Brazil cases, you covered Chicago O'Hare, which is a case a lot of people don't talk about that often, which is blows my mind. It's one of the best ones out there. So did any other cases really stick out to you as being like, wow, this is a smoking gun that I think kind of faded into obscurity, I guess?
Well, you bring up Chicago, and I am still amazed at that case, because it's one thing to say, it's one thing for one person to say, oh, I saw a flying saucer above the airport, right? But when you've got pilots, flight attendants, airport crewmen seeing this and reporting the same thing, a disc hovering above highly controlled, highly sensitive airspace, you have to start wondering what the heck were they looking at. And those are the cases that I gravitate towards, where there's FAA tapes, FAA transcripts, pilot audio, the cases that we cover in the basement office, where you hear the pilots in the cockpit observing UFOs, and in one case the pilot calls it a UFO, and these things are zipping like over their plane, they're almost ducking in the cockpit as this thing zips over. And it's like, is this where we're at, where we just kind of have to hope, you know, something doesn't hit your plane? I mean, and you learn these aren't isolated cases. The cases of UFOs, unidentified flying objects, breaking into sensitive airspace, flying under, above, in front of our pilots, the Navy just called it a safety hazard. The Navy Joe Gratisher with the Navy recently just called all, you know, a safety hazard. Okay, so what are you doing about it, man?
That is such a good point, Stephen. I mean, the ATIP, the secret Pentagon program, their sort of investigation was all based on a national security threat. Like, are these UFOs a threat to us? And I think you're right. When they're zipping past the pilots, or they don't know what to do about them, do I fire at this thing? Do I leave? Like, what do I do? The threat almost seems more from us in terms of, look at cases like the Tehran incident of 1976. A pilot almost died trying to shoot at a UFO. And there are other cases where this has happened, where pilots have died trying to chase an unidentified flying object. So I do wonder, is the threat more with how we respond to these things, and that there is no protocol for it?
And I start off by saying to a lot of folks, I'm not here to convince you that what this pilot saw that zipped over his plane is an alien. I'm here to convince you that he saw something unidentified. Neither he, the FAA, the military, the people who are supposed to know, don't know. That's all I want to convince you, and that's a problem. You know?
Yeah.
The people that are supposed to protect American airspace, keep it safe, keep it clear of hostile or foreign or unidentified objects, a lot's slipping through their fingers right now.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, and you covered so many cases, and you had audio in there that I'd never heard before. Some of them really, really eerie to hear. And another one of the things you talk about in the show, you showed video, you had audio from the base commander. This was the Rendlesham Forest incident. Like, the motherlode of, it's Britain's Roswell, basically. Now, had you known about this case prior to covering it with Nick on the show?
I had not known the deep nitty-gritty details. I knew it was Air Force. I knew it was a triangle that they had seen. Basically, so I know Colonel Holt's. I knew Colonel Holt's story. Peniston's story, I hadn't really heard about. I knew like the brass tacks of what happened in Rendlesham, but not the other stuff.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to touch on that other stuff with you. I mean, so we have a case, 1980, UFOs seen over two joint military bases. Now we've come to learn from the base commander that nuclear weapons were being housed on the base without Britain's knowledge, and the UFOs affected the nuclear... It's insane. It's insane about everything that happened with this case. But one thing you covered in your show, which is one of the big game changers, I think, in this case, is the effects on the officers who saw this, who experienced it. And we're talking the John Burroughs story. Now, this guy had physical ailments occur after this, right?
Yes. So, oh my gosh, this blew me away. You can actually see my response in the episode that because of their interaction, proximity to the object that they saw, they claim that they received, physical ailments from that radiation, whatever it may be. They were exposed to something. Now, that may sound like science fiction, but when medical records come up, U.S. senators get involved, health insurance companies get involved, and when you're able to read with your own eyes, yes, they did receive trace amounts of radiation from this object, and yes, we are going to cover your healthcare costs because of that. I couldn't believe that. Like, I couldn't believe that there was an official acknowledgement of their interaction, of the military's interaction with a UFO. And because of that, Air Force officers were hurt because of that. And you're just like, okay, so that's pretty solid proof, you know? Like, they didn't even work around, like, okay, let's put something else in writing, like, okay, in the line of duty, or something like that. Like, it was like, because of your encounter at Rendlesham in 1980, like, yeah, like, we acknowledge this happened to you and that you did get this ailment and we're going to help you pay for it. Wow.
One of her maids in the Philippines was an aswang.
I felt like someone was choking me.
I looked up and I saw it and I looked right at him.
Nobody saw a single thing.
And there's such thing as evil spirits. I believe that.
Those very people who don't believe in something end up getting bit in the ass later on.
Hello, believers, non-believers, and everyone in between. I'm Sapphire Sindalo, creator of the Something Scary web series and podcast, panelist on Travel Channel's Paranormal Caught on Camera, and now the host of Stories with Sapphire. It's a podcast where I share my personal exploration of paranormal phenomena through stories, interviews, and poems. New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also join me live every week on Twitch when I draw my episode thumbnail art. Head over to storieswithsapphire.com for more information. That's Sapphire, S-A-P-P-H-I-R-E. Salamat.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good night.
You talk about proof. Now, there's another key player in this case, Jim Penniston, who was with John Burroughs during one of these events. And this is where things get a little murky, I think, for a lot of people who use this case to depend on in terms of documentation, how many people were involved. We have so many officers who've come forward to say that they experienced this. Jim Penniston, he says that he touched the craft, a code of some sort was downloaded into his brain, and he's trying to decipher this. Now, this is where it gets really science fiction-y, for me at least. I struggle with this one, man. So I'd love to hear, what do you think about, you go from John Burroughs, senators fighting to get him health coverage for a life-threatening ailment from a UFO event, to someone saying they now have a binary code downloaded into their brain. So what do you make of this juxtaposition there with this case?
Yeah. Okay. So if you notice in the basement office, we had Burroughs and Holt like in their own episode. And then we had a whole episode dedicated to Penniston. And we started that episode with a disclaimer of like, look, there is basically no hard evidence to like support this story. Like we can't show you a document, a photo, video, audio, anything to prove that what he's saying is real, other than the fact that, yes, he was there. He was there. We know that. Yes, you know, we have the document of the statement he gave, you know, like that happened. But we were going to let him tell his story, you know, because he was there. It's documented. He saw something. We've got two credible witnesses that, you know, were in the same place. So let's let him tell a story. But beyond that, it's a great story, but one you can't prove. But one you shouldn't like shut out either. Like you want to be sensitive, you know, and be like, you know, tell me your story. You don't want to like cut off people because like, oh, show me a photo, you know, because I don't have a photo of my sighting, you know, like I don't have physical proof to prove to you that I actually saw what I saw, but I know I did, but I still want to tell my story. And so Penniston, you know, okay, let's hear your story. And I struggle with it as well. I mean, it would make a great movie. Just say this about Rendlesham. He claims he touched this craft. He saw a flash of light and then images. And he claims actually later on at his home, these images started playing almost like a hologram in front of his eyes. And he wrote these images down. Now, that sounds like a movie on the Sci-Fi Channel, but I start to observe, I'm like, does any technology exist today that we can see where something can be beamed into the human brain? And it turns out there is. The military has an audio wave. It's basically like a gun. This is real. That they can beam audio or voices to your head. It's if you Google this exists. The patent exists. It's out there. There's a ray, an invisible like ray gun or set. It actually looks like a satellite dish, and they can beam audio to where you would hear it in your head. And so I'm like, okay, I'm looking at a patent. I'm looking at the report that this exists. Okay, so technology to beam something into someone's head exists. Okay, so in that sense, his story becomes a little bit less crazy in that the technology to do that in an infant stage exists.
That's a good point, man. I mean, until it's every physicist or scientist who come out with these wacky theories, they're crazy until it's proven real. And I think that's the kind of world we live in now, where a lot of these things we thought would never happen are happening. And they've been happening for a while. So I agree with you. You know, Rendlesham remains one of the most credible UFO cases out there. All the witnesses, most of them are still alive that we can talk to, which makes it different, you know, from the Roswells and stuff like that.
I just want to say, like, The Rendlesham has been attacked for being a hoax, a prank, etc. And I get that as a possibility, as a possibility. But Colonel Holt, I found him credible. We have the evidence of the audio of him out investigating, and there's no way around the fact that that sounds legit, you know? So you have to be open to the possibility that it could be a hoax, embellished, exaggerated, but the evidence that exists, the radiation, like, it's something happened in those woods, man. You know,
I'm with you on that. I think right now I'm gonna play a little bit of that audio for the audience to hear. It's so eerie. So yeah, I'm gonna play that right now.
We're about 150 or 200 yards from the site. Everyone else is just deathly calm. There's no doubt about it. There's some type of strange flashing red light ahead.
There's yellow.
I saw a yellow tinge in it too.
Weird.
It appears that he may be moving a little bit this way.
Yes, it's brighter than it has been.
Yeah.
It's coming this way.
Awesome.
It is definitely coming this way.
The two
pieces of it are showing off.
Yeah,
there is no doubt about it. This is weird.
Yeah, so that audio is pretty freaky. But I want to move on to some more recent videos, actually, with you, Steven. Now, this is one you brought to me that I had never seen before. So I feel like I'm failing as a quote-unquote ufologist. But yeah, tell us a little about this case out of Utah that you found.
Okay, so there's this drone footage, I believe, out of Beaver, Utah, from a few years back from a, like, video film company. They were, from what I understand, testing a new drone or shooting footage of their drone of, like, landscapes and stuff. And they were out in the plains near the mountain ranges in Beaver, Utah, and filmed a bunch of stuff. They come back weeks later, they're going through the footage and they see something zip by the camera and they're like, wait, was that a bird or what was that? They play it back and they keep playing it back and looking at it, and it gets weirder every time they look at it. And so they posted the clip, you know, and people, including myself, really started looking at it, you know, frame by frame. Was this a bird? Was this a bug? Yeah, okay, yeah, it was a bird. It looks like a seagull, something like that. But then you watch it again, you're like, wait, is that coming out of from behind the mountain? It looks like it comes down through the valley and then turns and zips past the camera. And you keep watching, and you're like, yeah. And then crazy people, and I give it, like, hats off to them, they went through and analyzed distance, size. So they went through, they found the exact location of where this was, the size of the trees, the size of the distance between the drone and the tree. And you can watch these videos online where they've drawn lines. This equals 25 feet. This equals this much. The height of the mountain, we know this mountain is this high. So, and they triangulate, you know, speed, height, and distance into this huge mathematical thing. And when the math and the science is placed on screen, this sucker, you know, a bird or bug, that suddenly goes away. And you're like, okay, the size does change. You know, it gets bigger as it approaches. Okay, so what size does it change? We can estimate its speed now. And wow, it's like moving at like Mach 8, Mach 9. So what is this thing? And when you really look at this thing, man, looks like tech.
Yeah.
In my view, it looks like a white little pill moving. And okay, so is it CGI? Is some random video film company that shoots drone footage professionally, did they decide we need some viral attention? Let's put in a UFO. Why would you, I don't know, why would you put something in that at first looks like a bird or a bug that isn't all immediately like, whoa, you know?
Right.
So it's subtle. So I'm open to that because a lot of CGI crap exists out there. Almost every day I see a new CGI UFO on Twitter. I'm like, oh, God damn it. You know, like, just stop this. You know, it's just murkying the waters. But this case fascinates me because the witnesses, the sources, they seem legit. The science behind it seems legit. And the speed, when you zoom in, you're able to, it's in super HD, this footage. When you zoom in, when it comes out of the mountain range, you can see it pivot. It pivots and then zips. And it matches when you listen to the eyewitness testimony of the Nimitz encounter and how that object was, you know, how it was moving and the speed at which it would move, incredible speeds, and the way it would pivot and turn and zip. I just kept connecting those two. And that's what I see in that footage, which I think went mostly underreported because of just how subtle it is and how you can dismiss it. But there is a video, and if you can find it, just to show a clip of how they've put the math and science on distance and speed of everything that you're looking at, and there's no way to deny that that sucker isn't something flying in front of the lens like this. Its size changes as it approaches, and that's, like, amazing to me.
Yeah. I
love that footage.
I when you brought it to me, I was really, you know, I'm always, you know, hesitant about UFO videos, but when I saw it, my initial reaction was like, it's a bug. It's a bug. But then right. I did exactly what you said, and I went back and did it frame by frame, and you can literally see this thing coming from, like, behind the mountain range. Yeah, so that one, man, I'm so happy you brought it to me. I hope people will look into it more. And the fact that these guys who shot the drone footage came forward with this and said, no, like, this wasn't like a bug, a bird. We see this shit all the time. So, yeah. Like, that's enough for me to be like, there's something to this.
Yeah, totally, 100%. Yeah.
Well, underreported was a good way to put it. Now, this next one for me is the most underreported UFO video to date. I mean, this thing blows the Tic Tac, the Go Fast out of the water, in my personal opinion. And I'm just going to read it here because it's a little convoluted, but this came from, supposedly, a Homeland Security video. The object in the video, it was captured on thermal imaging. Let's see, what else? This happened at the Rafael Hernandez Airport in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico. So, yeah, man, this one is... What do you make of it? Had you heard about this case before? What do you think?
Okay, so I had heard about it. I had seen what I thought was the full video, but I apparently just saw a clip before. I didn't know the nitty-gritty details. But let me just walk you through this video a little bit.
Please.
The thing that's shocking is it apparently breaks airspace over the Rafael Hernandez Airport, you know, which is, you know, run by the FAA, you know, that's it. So it flies over an official airport, the Rafael Hernandez Airport. And because it breaks through the airspace, is not responding to radio, doesn't have a transponder, planes on the ground are delayed. The airport shuts down because something's in our airspace. It's not responding to radio. I mean, that's creepy and that's scary and that's dangerous. It leaves the Rafael Hernandez airspace. Apparently, at this point, we have a Department of Homeland Security border protection plane filming it move. And the part that I didn't know about this video that you can clearly see at the end is that this sucker goes into the ocean. And I was like, no way does this happen. And then...
And then it comes back out.
Comes back up.
I'm sorry to steal your thunder there, man. I got too excited.
Comes back up. And, like, oh my God. So that it becomes a USO, you know, unidentified submerged object at that point. And, you know, that's crazy. Now, you have to think, okay, maybe it's a, you know, top secret military experimental drone or, you know, flying torpedo. We know these things exist. Maybe the Navy is experimenting because they're open about doing this anyway. Transmedium transportation, you know, dating back to the 40s, you read news reports about the Navy wanting a flying submarine. So could it be, you know, something like that? Sure, but why is the military endangering their own, you know, airspace of, you know, commercial and, you know, public airliners? Like, I could see them experimenting, but why are you causing such a hassle and safety hazard for your own citizens, you know, in the process? There's a better, safer way to do it that could avoid, you know, planes that are full of 150 people, you know? So you got to, like, juggle that. Also, you have to be open to the fact that the video is completely fake. I lean towards it's not. It seems to have all the hallmarks, legitimacy. This is a 150. You can read it online. You sent it to me. There's a 159 page analysis.
Holy shit.
Of the art here itself. And, like, they go through, there are here acknowledgments. There are letters here, FOIA letters to the Department of the Air Force. There's documentation here that, you know, the video is real. The object itself is estimated to actually not be that large, 5 feet, maybe 7 feet. The speed of this object is also caught my eye as not very fast, 80 to 100 miles an hour. Okay. When it strikes the water, it's estimated to hit the water at 110 miles an hour. Now, if you're in your car, you know, your Prius, you're driving along, and you hit a body of water at 109 miles an hour, it's going to mess your car up. Like, it's essentially like hitting a wall, essentially. I mean, things are going to break, fly off, debris. But the fact that this thing is observed hitting the water at 109 miles an hour and then bloop, like coming back and being cool and like moving and still functioning, that's okay. That's interesting. You know, like we don't, something you see every day.
Yeah, that's such a good point, man. And even at the end of the video, we see that when it comes out of the water, it either breaks into two objects or it meets up with something else, which is like, I don't understand how this video could not be bigger than it is. I don't know. It faded. And I don't know how that could happen.
Now, in the report that I just brought up, they offer the possible explanation that what we're seeing is a heat register reflection off the water. Because it's so close to the water, the heat register is reflecting through the infrared camera. So it's a mirage of two images, but they're not able to prove that that's exactly what we're seeing. So the possibility is open that either it meets up with a second object or it actually splits into two objects. Now, alone, this case is confusing. But when you look at other cases, the Nimitz included, where they observed a USO on top of a UFO, and you look at other cases of UFOs flying near bodies of water, above bodies of water, or into bodies of water, there are a lot of them, and it seems to mimic what we're seeing in this video, supposedly from the government. In season 2 of The Basement Office, we have a whole episode dedicated to USOs.
Oh, cool. So you're tackling that. You have to. I mean, this is such an underreported part of ufology or UFO history that doesn't get covered often. There's maybe one or two books on it, but these reports are almost more astounding. I mean, I can think of the Shag Harbor incident being one. My UFO incident happened over a body of water.
Right.
Yeah, it's more common than I think people think.
It blew me. So in episode 2 of season 1, which is about flying saucers, Nick blew my mind because we were analyzing the Brazilian Navy saucers, and he said, "Hey, just so you know, this isn't like isolated. Like UFOs seen above or in bodies of water, they're called USOs, and it's like a thing." And I was like, "Wait, what?
Yeah,
you're in the water now." And the more I read about it, I was like, "Holy crap! Like water is playing a key role." It seems in a lot of sightings. I don't know what that is, but it does.
It's worth looking at, I think. It's a very, I think, important part of all this that a lot of people don't understand. And you did mention the Tic Tac event. Now, we have Commander Fravor, the pilot who first went up and intercepted this object, saying there was something in the water 50 times bigger than the Tic Tac that he saw. And the water below was like bubbling, something was going on.
It was the water, where the thing was under the water, and according to this official Navy pilot testimony, the top of the water was disturbed. It was being disturbed in almost white froth, and one of the smaller Tic Tacs was hovering zipping above, directly above this unidentified submerged object.
What is that, you know? I mean, was it controlling the Tic Tac? We also know that there was more than one Tic Tac. Again, we're seeing such a condensed, small version of the video where the radar operators are saying they were tracking tons of these things.
They were a lot of radar registries were happening of multiple objects. Now, you know, I'm open to the possibility that what happened in 2004 was a top secret exercise where, unbeknownst to the Navy, they were kept in the dark. Hey, let's send in our new awesome shit and let's see how our current modern pilots react to it. Let's see if we can evade radar. Let's see if we can evade flight patterns. Let's see how, you know, a potential enemy modern fighter unit would react to our new special awesome thing, and keep these guys in the dark about it, because so they can we can observe them react in real time. You know, maybe it was that kind of thing. But you know, when you've got astrophysicists and you know, top minds analyzing the Tic Tacs and saying these suckers are moving at speeds that no human could survive, and then you got to start going like, okay, what's then what?
Then what? Well, and my only argument to that, Stephen, is I've had the actual radar operator tell me, hell no, another branch of the military isn't going to test something in our airspace during training exercises. That would be preposterous. It would be so dangerous. I understand, like, the element of surprise and not knowing would be the best way to test these pilots and the Navy overall. Like, send it in and see how they react to these things. But again, we go back to, that is a huge threat to our pilots. Even if it was a test, do we think that they would put the pilots in harm's way just to see how they would react to something like this? I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know.
Yeah, there is testimony that one of the Tic Tacs was approaching one of the F-18s, and the pilot was saying, it's engaging. It's engaging me. Like, basically, this thing is engaging me as a threat. That's not something to take lightly, man. Like, this is our military. These are our men and women in uniform who put their lives on the line, and when they feel like something is engaging them, then that's serious business. You know, like, we need to take it seriously. We can't just dismiss it as like, oh, okay, that was just, you know, a seagull.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more, man. Well, in terms of this new age we live in with UFOs, now we have Tom DeLonge and To the Stars Academy working with the former ATIP director on looking at this stuff. And it has. It's gone mainstream like never before. Disclosure. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Do you think that's a thing? Will the government ever admit that UFOs exist? Will they ever come forward and say what they know about it? What do you think on this word disclosure?
I think the government and military have already admitted UFOs are real. I mean, by definition, when you've got the Department of the Navy saying what you're seeing in these videos is unidentified aerial phenomenon, they're releasing statements saying these are UFOs. And now they're not saying these are aliens. Yeah. You know, they're not saying extraterrestrial biological entities are flying these things. They're saying these are UFOs. We're the military, and we don't know. So I think that's happened. Disclosure. Now, I know. I think what you're getting at is that some people think or opine that we are in a time where the government and the military and the people that were in the shadows are finally dropping the curtain a little bit and saying like, okay, little by little, let's let the public know what's going on. You know, not all at once, but just little by little, this slow drip of information. And dude, I don't know. I do know that if that was true, that theory was true, that yes, the government and military has known and knows, and for some reason, we need to let the public in on some of this. This is probably how they would do it. Little by little, every 4 or 5 months, something drops, because you can't just dump decades, if not centuries, of information into the general public's lap and say, here you go, you know?
It's right. It's like your body going into shock when you enter cold water. Like, how would we continue with society if we knew that everything would change? I mean, religion, science, humanity, history, everything would change if they just, boom, here's everything, you know?
Only if they're alien, though. If, you know, if the end game of all of this, what you want to call disclosure, ends in alien or interdimensional, then yeah, religion, history books, a lot of things are going to be seen differently, are going to be flipped on their head a little bit. I'm of the opinion that modern, where we are now, most people are going to go, whoa, that's awesome.
You're right. I think we don't give humanity credit sometimes.
Yeah. I don't think, I think in the 90s, if you watch a lot of sci-fi in the 90s, the way people, entertainers, writers, artists thought people would react, you see pandemonium in the streets of New York, like people running around and losing their minds. And I think now, years later, I think most people would be seen like, oh, sweet, let me get an Instagram of this, you know? You know, like, I think people's minds, the way of thinking has changed. And honestly, I think that's the key. Let's just pretend that I believe wholeheartedly in such a thing as alien UFOs. Let me entertain that. I think beyond physical evidence, being able to look up in the sky and seeing, let's say, a saucer, and then the government saying, yes, Steve, what you are indeed looking at is an alien UFO from another galaxy. On top of that, it's how my brain works. Because I think about how my brain worked when I saw my UFO, and it was wonder and panic, kind of like when Elliot first meets E.T. in the cornfield. That, oh, like that, you know, that's how it was. But since then, there is... I don't look back at that memory with panic anymore. I look back with wonder and something I can't really put my finger on, to be honest with you. And to Nick Pope in the episode, I said something personal, something that feels personal, but it's an emotional thought. It's I don't know. I know there are people like Steve Greer who talk about like the mind and emotional and spiritual connections. And if I'm just like spitballing here, that's something that needs to be refined for that connection to really happen.
There seems to be this movement as of late of CE5, I guess they call it, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, where humans using whatever, consciousness, something, to initiate contact with these UFOs, no matter what they are, interdimensional, alien, whatever, military, using the mind to try to communicate with these things, which is, it's interesting. It's something I am just learning about and looking at, but yeah, maybe this does have a lot more to do with us than it does anything out there. I don't know.
I mean, right now, it sounds like you and I are writing the next Spielberg movie. I mean, at the way we discuss it, I mean, and in a lot of ways, it's still science fiction because there's little to no science fact behind it. And as such, as a journalist, a documentary filmmaker, I have to put that stuff on the back burner and say, okay, if and when, I'll be willing to bring this back up. But until then, like, let's just focus on what we know, because that's the easiest stuff to digest and observe.
And I think that's what you're doing with the Basement Office. So you mentioned USOs. Is there anything else you could tease to us about season two and what you're going to be looking at? Anything you'd be willing to share?
Okay. I won't tell you the topic of this episode, but we tackle something that has no evidence, really. And we talk about it for 30 minutes. one episode. But we talk about it from a pop culture point of view. Okay, I'll give you one clue of another episode. Wunderwaff.
I'm going to leave the audience with that. I love it, man. I love it. Well, Steven, where can we find everything you're up to, man? When can we expect Basement Office?
Basement Office right now is on hold during, you know, quarantine and coronavirus lockdown for a multitude of reasons. when this all dies down. So I don't want to overpromise, but two, 3 weeks from now, I'm hoping F1 slips out there. But be patient, everyone. It's coming, and it's awesome. Like, I love it. Like, season 2 is the bomb. I just can't wait for you guys to see it. For my stuff, like my personal stuff that I work on, you go to stephengreenstreet.com. Basically everything that I've worked on, including the basement office, is there.
Awesome, man. Well, I mean, your passion and excitement alone is what I think we need in this topic. It often lacks that because we don't have answers and we don't have that one case that's going to break the whole thing open. But I'm sure you could agree, if one of these UFO cases is authentic and is, let's say, alien, that's enough for us to rest on, is that one case. So I hope you keep doing this. It's invigorating. It's exciting. It keeps me going. And thank you so much for joining me on Somewhere in the Skies.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me.
Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network. To learn more, visit entertainmentonepodcast.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.